My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another edition of the Inside United podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today's guest is Scott Ashley, who is our managing editor of Beyond Today Publications. And we're here in person doing this podcast in the studio. We've been producing a podcast almost every week, but because of COVID, the majority of this past 6 months have been done via Skype, Zoom, Teams, and any other way except being in person. So being in the studio here is very welcome. So welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You've been here several times. You're here in Cincinnati. I know you live in Denver, in the Denver area. What brings you here to Cincinnati right now?
Well, I've been here for two purposes. One is our Council of Elders meetings, which we conducted a week ago. Wrapped up last Thursday. And then since then, I've been here with the beginning of the Ambassador Bible College school year, talking about the background to the Gospels and the New Testament, some of the cultural and historical background there to kind of build a framework for the students as they begin the new academic year.
I sure hear about it. The students comment about it when we talk about the classes they take. They comment about things that they had never heard before, and that comes usually from your class. So today what we want to do is talk about one of the subjects that you have been teaching at ABC. Mm-hmm. And we've had the class now going for a whole week, and you've done, what, about three or four classes?
Four classes.
Yes. He comes in here several times a year on what's called the module program, where he does four or five or even more classes in one shot. But we're going to talk about a subject that he's been teaching here this past week. And this is about the different ethnic and cultural groups that Jesus interacted with as recorded in the Gospels. I know we hear about them and they're kind of read over very quickly, but Scott digs deeper and finds out who were these people that were the other groups that Jesus and his disciples interacted with, and some of the different groups that we see in the Gospels. First of all, Scott, what are some of those groups?
Well, we would assume that Jesus interacts with other religious Jews, and that's true. That's the majority of the people that he does interact with. But even they are subdivided. We're familiar with groups like the Pharisees, Sadducees, priests, scribes, things like that. And that's a whole subject in itself. There are also secular Jews who have much more of a Roman viewpoint in life. Those people are called Herodians in the Bible. There's a group of Jewish nationalists, you might say, called the Zealots, and they start the Zealot movement that leads later to a war there in Israel between the Romans and the Jews. They're also outright pagans. These people are descended from Greek settlers who settled in the area east of the Jordan River and the Sea of Galilee. And then the group we'll talk a lot about today, the Samaritans. They're a very different group, unusual group, one of my favorite groups to study, having been to Samaria and seen where these people live. They're a fascinating group.
Yes, they are. Actually, I've been to Samaria myself. They're on top of that big hill, and
yes,
you know, this is being the opposing capital from Jerusalem.
Right,
one time. But it's very interesting about what you mentioned about the various groups. And I've been teaching a class here in James, the General Epistles, mm-hmm. and there's an oblique statement made about greetings to the 12 tribes in diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously these were people that they kind of knew who they were. He knew their identity. Doesn't tell us anything about them. But
yes,
he talks about them in diaspora. And you'll find out historically that there were about as many Jews outside mm-hmm. of Palestine as there were in Judea mm-hmm. itself. So mm-hmm. it's interesting that there was a lot of movement of people. People were not as individualized and compartmentalized, you know, they were very much intermixing with another.
Mm-hmm.
But the Samaritans show up significantly and prominently several times. And, you know, there are hospitals named after them.
Yeah.
It's usually not because the whole nation was that wonderful, but there was a couple people that were very good.
Uh-huh.
But I'd like to hear more about the background of these Samaritans, because they seem to be one of the more exciting groups.
And they're fascinating. They have a fascinating history. And to understand that history, you have to go way back to the 700s BC, before Christ, before he appears on the scene. And that's the origin of the Samaritans. And short version of history is there's King Saul and then David and then Solomon. And in the 900s BC, King Solomon dies. His kingdom after his death is divided up among two kingdoms. There's a kingdom of Israel in the northern part of the land, the northern 10 tribes. And there's a southern kingdom of Judah, composed of two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. That's the origin of the Jews. It's the first time we see this term Jews in the Bible. That's who it's referring to, those of the southern kingdom of Judah. But the northern kingdom of Israel in particular has a very sordid history after that. When Solomon was king, he has 1,000 wives and concubines. Idolatry gets introduced by that. A lot of pagan practices and customs. And the northern 10 tribes of Israel continue in that wrong path of disobedience to God and worshiping other gods. So as a result of that, over several centuries, God sends prophet after prophet to warn the people of Israel to repent. Don't go down this path. It's going to destroy you. And sure enough, 721 to 718 BC, the Assyrian Empire rises and comes in and invades the northern 10 tribes of Israel and captures their capital city, which is Samaria, is the name of it. That's where the term Samaritan comes from. And takes the Israelites captive, most of them. And this is confirmed by archaeology as well. The land is basically left desolate after that invasion. There are still a few poor people left in the land, the unskilled people, the people who don't have farms and vineyards and so on. So there's a few scattered Israelites left in the land. But the policy of the Assyrian Empire to reduce rebellion among the peoples they captured is they would bring in other peoples from other parts where they had conquered their lands, and they would swap the populations. So they bring in people, say, from the area of Babylon, down in what is today modern-day Iraq and southern Iraq, and bring them in, or people from Persia, what is today Iran, and they swapped out the population. So they brought those, they moved the Israelites out and over to what is today Iraq and Iran, and moved peoples from there over to the area of what is today northern Israel. And so they brought in these Gentiles, non-Jews, non-Israelites, with their pagan beliefs and pagan gods. And those people intermixed to some extent with the Israelites who were still left in the land, the poorer people. And that's the origin of the Samaritans. And later, again, they get their name from the kingdom, the capital of the kingdom of Israel, otherwise known as Samaria there. So that's where they came from. Very different ethnic and cultural group from
and religious
and religious. Yes, yeah. They developed their own religion too, and the origins of that religion lead to a lot of conflict with the Jews. For instance, there's a term for it called syncretism, a mixture of religions and religious beliefs. So you have people from different lands brought in and mixed in with a few remaining Israelites. So they adopt some biblical practices from the Israelites. They bring in some priests there who are familiar with the big biblical practices. So there's kind of this mishmash of pagan customs and ideas with an overlay of some truth from the Bible. And that leads to a lot of resentment among the Jews, because the Jews in the southern kingdom, which still exists, view the Samaritans as half-breeds because of the mixing of the Israelites with them, as a bunch of heretics because they've got their pagan ideas and so on, and a bunch of liars because the Samaritans, as part of their religion, appropriate things from the Bible and apply them to themselves. For instance, they they only believe in the first five books of the Bible, the books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So they kind of appropriate those books for themselves. And there is a version of the Bible called the Samaritan Pentateuch after the five books of Moses. But they twist it around. They rewrite some of the scriptures to say God commands them to build an altar and temple on Mount Gerizim, which is in Samaria, rather than in Jerusalem. And they rewrite the promises to Abraham to apply not to the Jews, Abraham's descendants, but to themselves, the Samaritans. So this creates a lot of hostility between the Jews and the Samaritans. They both view each other as heretics and liars and cultural appropriators and so on, to use a term that's here today. So that's kind of the roots of the hostility between those two groups.
Well, by the time the Christianity came into that area, in fact, the first converts in Samaria, they ran across Simon the sorcerer.
Crazy ideas in that area.
He seemed to be wanting, of course, he had other reasons, you know, to kind of join the group, so to speak. Was to become a leader of the group, but he was a Samaritan. Mm-hmm.
He was, and that's one of the things that's kind of surprising. Reading it early on in the book of Acts, some of the first people they go to with the message of the gospel is the Samaritans, especially considering the hostility there. That's a little bit unusual there.
Well, I found that interesting because in this age that we live in right now, where there's resentment towards groups called racism, and all that, the whole group is painted black or painted, you know, by a certain flavor. And so they're dismissed. Everybody is.
Right.
But it's interesting that Jesus came across Samaritans that he was able to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And even the example, my wife and I were talking about this on our way over here, that between the Jews, the Levites, for example, and the Samaritans, the Jews were the good people. They obeyed God. You know, they had at least a show of it and all. And the whole parable is based upon the fact that here's this Samaritan, this people from this group, this race, you know, this person.
A despised group.
A despised group.
Yeah.
And he was the one that cared. Mm-hmm. And it's a contrast not only of racist things there, but also about the fact that the Levites were the ones who were the keepers of the law, or the ones that were the custodians of the law, are supposed to be doing things right. But the Samaritan is the one who showed compassion, and he's the one who was. It's interesting how those examples are used and brought forward, where a despised race is given some good points, some credit.
Yeah, there's an awful lot to that story that, if you don't understand the background and the geography, because Jesus. It's not a true story. It's a parable, an illustration with a lesson for us. But it takes place on the road between Jerusalem and Jericho. And this is about a 15-mile road that has quite a high elevation rise of, about 3,000 feet, 3,500 feet from Jericho climbing up to Jerusalem. And I've been on part of that road. And it was dangerous in the first century. That's why Jesus describes the robbers, the thieves who set upon this traveler there, beat him up, leave him for dead. And incidentally, there was a little Roman fort along this road. If you know where to look, you can still see it today, which illustrates the fact they needed to guard that road and keep the robbers.
They needed the police.
Yeah, they needed the police there. But in the story, the a priest and a Levite are going to Jerusalem or from Jerusalem down to Jericho, and they see the injured man laying there, and the part of the story is the road there is very narrow and steep. It drops off into a very deep canyon, and that's part of the story because the Gospels word it as they passed by the injured man. The road is so narrow, you practically have to step over him to get there. And that's part of the story. And people tend to give the priest and Levite a bad rap because of this. But part of their priestly duties and responsibilities to serve in the temple, they could not have been contaminated by a dead body or by blood. And if so, they couldn't carry out their religious functions as priest and Levite. So they actually have a reason not to assist the man because it will make them ceremonially unclean. So they pass over, don't help the man, and then lo and behold, in Jesus' parable, a despised Samaritan comes along, somebody who would have been viewed as the lowest of the low, the dregs of society. But he is the man who comes, sees the injured man lying there, bandages him up, puts him on his animal, takes him to an inn, and promises the innkeeper that he will pay the man's expenses, mm-hmm. and whatever it takes to take care of him until he's nursed back to health or regains his health. So the point of that, what prompts this whole parable is a man asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? And Jesus uses this parable to illustrate who really was a neighbor. And it was the man most people would have despised at that time, the Samaritan. So wasn't the priest, wasn't the religious people, wasn't the priest, wasn't the Levite. The one who really showed love to his neighbor was the Samaritan. Mm-hmm. And there, that's a powerful lesson for us, that we shouldn't look down on anyone for their ethnic, racial background, heritage, and so on. A lot of powerful lessons in that parable.
Are there still Samaritans around today? Have they maintained their ethnicity, or did they just disappear into the woodwork?
No, it's a fascinating story, and I've been through that area. Today, it's the modern city of Nablus in the northern West Bank. In ancient times, Nablus is a corruption of the Greek word Neapolis, new city in Greek. But that city is surrounded on two sides. It's kind of nestled in a valley between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, mentioned in the Bible. But Mount Gerizim was where the Samaritans had their temple. And there is a Samaritan community of 300-400 Samaritans who still exist to this day and still continue with biblical practices like the Passover every year. They slaughter lambs and roast them, just like you read about with Old Testament Israel and the Passover there. So yes, they're still there. I've wanted to go for years and see the Samaritan Passover, but I've never been able to work it out where I could be there at that time.
So they tried to do it just like their forefathers. Mm-hmm. Thousands of years ago.
Sure. Yeah. Their Bible is the five books of the Pentateuch with some alterations. But but yeah, that's their Bible. They try to follow that very religiously and do. So
you know, Scott, the word Samaritan, again, we've mentioned this, evokes, we kind of have a feeling with Samaritans. And yet, like I said, we have Samaritan's Hospital, one of the biggest charities in the United States is Samaritan's Purse.
Yes.
You know, there's a connection to good works connected with the Samaritans. But you mentioned how they were integrated into the population or what was left of the population by the Assyrians to kind of build their hegemony, you know, and their empire that would never end, just like the Soviets tried to do, mixing people around the 15 republics, you know, back and forth. It didn't work because they still, in the end, held their identity. But is there any more evidence or any more stories that you could tell about the Samaritans that come through history?
There was several stories about the hostility of the Jews, and this ties in with why the parable of the Good Samaritan is significant, because if you were a Jew walking in the land of Samaria in Christ's day, you could be killed, and vice versa. If you were a Samaritan walking in Jewish territory, you could be killed. It happens. Josephus, famous Jewish historian, talks about that. About 100 BC, a little bit earlier than that, there had been a significant war between Samaritans and Jews, and where Jewish fighters invaded Samaria, burned their temple, burned Samaritan villages, and that too contributed to a lot of the hostility there. So it was the hostility and hatred between the two groups was very much alive and well, and that's makes it all the more remarkable, some of the stories we read about it in the gospel, like the woman at the well, for instance. there when Jesus encounters the woman at the well. Jesus is up in Galilee to the north of Samaria, but three times a year, at least, he goes down to Jerusalem for the biblical feasts, Feast of Unleavened Bread and Passover and Feast of Pentecost and Feast of Tabernacles. So there's two ways to get there. One is to go right through Samaria. That's the fastest route. And the other route is to go down to the Jordan Valley and go alongside the Jordan River and then make the steep climb up to Jerusalem from there. But in one of these trips through Samaria, Jesus encounters this Samaritan woman at the well. It's very interesting because that is the first time that Jesus openly tells someone he is the Messiah.
To this woman. And,
yeah, this woman. So two things. One, it's a Samaritan who is a Samaritan setting. So that's surprising. And also the fact that it's a woman. That is really unusual because many of the rabbis at that time taught that no Jewish man should talk to a woman, but much less a Samaritan woman. There was a lot of gender prejudice at that time, in addition to the prejudice against the Samaritans themselves. So,
actually, I would love to hear about the Samaritan woman, which is a story all of its own. And mm-hmm. I think that we would like to have a separate discussion about that here. So
sure.
We want to thank you very much. So be sure to join us next week to hear the story about the woman at the well and all the symbolism and all the things that represents about Jesus Christ, about his messiahship, about God's view of mankind, racism. I mean, you could just go through the whole lot and all that. So, but thank you for joining us here on Inside United. And be sure to tell your friends about our podcast. We hope to have more people come and talk to us and write to us at podcast@ucg.org. And if there's anything you'd like to ask Scott Ashley, be sure to write to us here at podcast@ucg.org. Remember, you can always find us on the homepage of ucg.org. On the main menu bar, click or tap on the podcast button, and you'll get right there to the very last podcast and have access to all the previous ones. Or you can find us on your favorite podcasting app on iOS or Android. And we're also on Spotify. Now you can find us on Spotify. So thank you for being with us, Scott. Come and join us again for another edition of Inside United.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.